Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good morning, everyone. I presume some of you might have already implemented one of the global food safety initiative schemes in your facility. So this webinar will outline the basic steps involved in successfully implementing the chosen GFSI standard in your organization and also avoid some of the common pitfalls. Like any other webinar, the intent is to provide some basic information on the topic and thus help you to kindle the interest and explore the topic further. So this is just for about an hour, and it's very difficult to cover everything in 1 hour. So that's why I said the idea is to provide some basic information so that you can go back and then start doing some additional research on the topic. Well, my name is Rama, and I'm the Technical Program Director for Perry Johnson Registrar Food Safety Certification. So this is a certification body located in Troy, Michigan. We certify food processing companies and also agricultural farms to the various GFSI recognized food safety standards. As I just mentioned to you, the intent is to kindle your interest in the topic and help you to explore further. So the webinar will not provide any suggestion or step-by-step process for the implementation of GFSI standard, because that would be construed as consultative. So this is not going to provide any suggestion or step-by-step process for the implementation of the GFSI standard. This is just a general overview of how it can be managed through the project management approach. I'm going to make use of the project management approach to implement GFSI certification standards. I have divided the contents of the webinar into 4 sections as shown on the slide. Section A will introduce you to both private and regulatory food safety standards. There are 2 types of standards. One is called regulatory standard, which, you know, where the compliance is a must. The other one is a private food safety standard. These are voluntary standards. Some of you may be already familiar with the common GFSI standards such as SQF, BRC, FSSC, etc. But I will have to repeat this for the benefit of others who are new to this type of certification, who are intending to implement the GFSI standard in their organization. This is primarily meant for people who are planning to introduce or implement some of these standards. Then in Section B, I will explain how to implement the chosen GFSI standard as a project. So this is what I told you a few minutes ago. I'm going to make use of the project management concepts to implement the chosen GFSI project. A project management approach to certification is ideal. If you want to implement GFSI standards, I think a project management approach is quite ideal. This section will explain how it can be achieved through the various phases of a project management process, such as project initiation, project implementation, and project evaluation, and finally, project closure. Section C will outline some of the common pitfalls in the implementation of the food safety management system. Every project is unique, and obviously every project has its own problems, unique problems. I will explain what the common pitfalls are as far as this project is concerned. This might also help you in avoiding these traps in the successful implementation of the project. Okay. Communication during or after audits is not a one-way traffic. Okay. As auditors, you can exercise your rights, and this is what I intend explaining in Section D. Consumers all over the globe are increasingly concerned about food safety, and you are well aware of that. Food safety is a shared responsibility. And the responsibility is shared by producers, processors, distributors, retailers, regulatory bodies, and consumers. The concept is easy to understand. However, there are a number of variables in the chain, food chain, that can affect the safety of food. Consumers are increasingly concerned about farm practices. Example, use of antibiotics and growth hormones in livestock, pesticide residues in crops and animals. So these are some examples of some concerns consumers are increasingly worried about. Also, bacteriological contamination in raw materials and finished products, poor hygiene, animal diseases, food additives, you know, like preservatives, et cetera, et cetera. So these are definitely, people are really concerned, consumers are really concerned about these things. There is a general misconception that regulatory bodies are primarily responsible for ensuring safety of products produced. That's generally, that's a general misconception because, as I just mentioned to you, it is a shared responsibility. The responsibilities of regulatory bodies, now here I'm talking about the food safety responsibilities of government agencies, primarily regulatory bodies. They are responsible for ensuring safety of products produced or processed. And it also includes protecting consumers from illness or injury caused by food, providing assurance to the public that food is suitable for consumption, and also provide health education programs to communicate principles of hygiene and maintaining confidence in internationally traded foods. So these are some responsibilities of government entities, regulatory bodies. And you may be familiar with Codex Alimentarius Commission. This is a part of WHO, World Health Organization. It provides guidelines for food safety, but it is the responsibility of the individual regulatory bodies, such as USFDA, to draft rules and regulations for their country. It is this approach that becomes a hurdle to import and export food products, because each and every country has its own import and export requirements. And that's how the concept of harmonization of standards came up, actually. So anyway, we are going to see all these things in the subsequent slides. So these are the responsibilities of regulatory bodies. Now, what about the industry? Mainly the manufacturers. It is also applicable to other entities such as farmers and retailers, wholesalers, distributors, etc., etc. The responsibility towards food safety of the products, you know, if it is manufactured, then it applies to manufacturers. We cannot overemphasize their importance, actually. And the responsibility includes providing food that is safe and suitable for consumption of their consumers, maintaining confidence in internationally traded food, and ensure consumers have clear and easily understood product information. This leads to labeling. So they should not confuse people with inappropriate labeling information. So these are the responsibilities of manufacturers, food manufacturers. Now what about consumers? They also have a specific responsibility towards food safety. They are expected to follow the relevant instructions provided on labels and also apply appropriate food hygiene measures. They also have definite responsibilities towards food safety. Now let's talk about private certification schemes. These are formal documented systems that are administered by the private sector. These are not mandatory. These are voluntary standards. These schemes prescribe methods to obtain specific objectives and also methods, and these things typically involve audits and certification. Private certification schemes are generally incorporated into supply chain contract. Normally, I think, you know, it's a part of the contract. If a retailer is wanting to buy something from a manufacturer, it's always mentioned in the contract, you know, the facility should be GFSI certified or should be audited by the audit team of the retailer, etc., etc. So it becomes a contractual commitment. The main driver of private certification schemes is the market force. The market demands it, and that's what is forcing manufacturers, retailers, and all those entities to go for GFSI certification. By implementing certification schemes, companies will be able to manage their food safety hazards. They will also be able to lower cost of their production, etc., etc. And by doing so, they will also be able to address regulatory requirements and thus reduce liability and also retain consumer loyalty. There was a talk about these standards replacing regulatory standards. It will never happen, actually. It's quite unlikely private certification schemes will ever replace regulatory standards for obvious reasons, because these are two parallel lines, because the two bodies have totally different objectives. But private certification schemes can also play a role in achieving regulatory objectives, because this is one of the requirements of all these private standards, actually. Okay? Meeting the regulatory requirements is one of the requirements of GFSI standards. So while we all know that the regulatory standard will not be replaced by private certification schemes, there is a serious move globally, not only in North America, but elsewhere also, to consider private schemes to be used as a factor within a risk-based framework. Okay? As a matter of fact, several regulatory authorities such as US FDA, CFIA, Canadian Food Inspection Agency, et cetera, have already started incorporating the use of private sector schemes into their regulatory oversight framework. They're not going to replace the regulatory requirements, but what is happening is these private standards, these regulatory bodies, have already started incorporating the use of these schemes into their regulatory oversight framework, okay, to achieve the health-related policies and things like that. So I think it is gradually gaining importance even in the regulatory framework also. I'm sure you're all familiar with the benefits of third-party certification, okay? And it's just a repetition of what you all have seen, But I think I just want to quickly go through some of the benefits. Third-party certification provides compliance with generic government requirements. This is what I just mentioned to you in the previous slide. Okay. And it also has the benefit of transparency. When the audits are done by third parties, there is good transparency there. And these standards always aim at continuous improvement. And all these things make the whole process more effective. One major benefit to the industry of third-party certification is the avoidance of duplicate audits. Okay, and GFSA has got a goal. What is that goal? One certified accepted everywhere. If you're certified to SQF, if you're certified to BRC, IFS, and things like that, these are GFSI recognized schemes, right? So once you get certified to any one of the standards, then it is accepted everywhere. And your client cannot say, no, you are certified only to SQF. I want you to get certified to BRC. No, because that's where harmonization of standards come into play. Okay. And also, companies that obtain third-party certification have greater opportunities with the buying community because it provides greater confidence. It provides confidence to buyers that systems in those companies are acceptable or up to some standard, and that's why it increases the value of manufacturing companies. Okay. And also these third-party certifications, they will be helping you to identify the risks within a company. It may be related to food safety risk, it may be, obviously food safety risk is related to business risk also. Okay. And also it validates the food safety management system that's implemented and how effective the processes are, et cetera, et cetera. And these standards, the third-party standards, they focus on policies, programs, procedures, records, and all other things. So it's a comprehensive program. Again, some of you are quite familiar with GFSI organization, Global Food Safety Initiative, but for the benefit of people who are going to implement these standards, this slide will definitely help you to understand. The Global Food Safety Initiative, the acronym is GFSI, is a result of collaboration between some of the world's leading food safety experts from retailers, manufacturers, food service companies, as well as service providers active in the food supply chain. So it is an association, it's an organization formed by food safety experts from these entities, retailers, manufacturers, food service companies, et cetera, et cetera. They have, GFSA has four important objectives. What are those objectives? Reduce food safety, the primary objective is to reduce food safety risk by delivering equivalence and convergence between effective food safety management systems. There are hundreds and hundreds, there were hundreds and hundreds of food safety standards. The first objective of GFSI was to harmonize, to bring them under one umbrella and harmonize these standards. So that's what I mentioned in the first objective. The second objective is manage costs in the global food safety system by eliminating redundancy, that is duplication of audits. Definitely after the introduction of GFSI standards, the duplication of audits has gone down drastically. And also the other objective is to develop competencies and capacities for doing food safety work. That means, I think, training people, training auditors, assessing the competency requirements of auditors, food safety auditors, etc., etc. So this is also one of the objectives of GFSI. Okay. And it also provides a platform for collaboration, knowledge exchange, and networking, and things like that. Prior to GFSI, I think GFSI was introduced sometime in 2000. Okay. I think it was in 2000. There was proliferation of demands for audits primarily from major buyers. I think, you know, there were, as I mentioned to you in the beginning, there were hundreds of food safety standards, all, you know, prescribing different requirements. Okay. So GFSI helped to harmonize all these standards. Now you have got, if you talk about manufacturing, we have got four important, or rather four basic standards, SQF, BRC food, IFS, and FSSC, things like that. Similarly for produce, you have a set of harmonized standards. Okay, let's get into the specifics of some certification schemes. We are talking about two different types of certification schemes. One is called ISO 17065 based schemes. The other one is called 17021 based schemes. These are accreditation schemes, nothing to do with your area of operation, but certification bodies get accredited to one of these standards. When we offer the certification programs, we offer under one of these two schemes. The first one, 17065, has ESCOF, BRC, BRC food, BRC packaging, BRC storage and distribution, IFS food, IFS pack secure, IFS logistics, and things like that. And also you have Global GAP, which is a produce safety standard. So all these are included in 17065 schemes. Whereas 17021, again, this is an accreditation standard, and that contains 22,000, FSSC 22,000. ISO 22,000 is not a harmonized GFSI benchmark standard because it doesn't have the prerequisite program included there, and that's why it doesn't have the, it has not been validated by GFSI, and it's not a harmonized standard or a BS benchmark standard. Okay. Let's quickly go through some of the GFSI benchmark certification standards. First, I'm taking up 17065 based standards. Okay. Again, many of you are quite familiar with SQF and BRC, and that's why I'm not getting into the details of the individual standards, but let me just quickly run through the basics of SQF and BRC. This one stands for, SQF stands for Safe Quality Food. This is a retailer-based certification scheme, and this is owned by the Food Marketing Institute, USA. I mean, this is a local standard, and this is also a global standard. And this is the only standard that is vertically integrated. What it means, I think you can use that code. It's not a standard, actually. It's an industry code. You can use that code for different sectors of the food chain, you know, like producer, vegetables and fruit production. It can also be applied to processing slash manufacturing, packaging material manufacturing, retailers, distributors, and things like that. You can use a code for different sectors to verify the food safety requirements of these entities, actually. Okay. And the food safety categories, you know, when I say categories, I think number one, and I'm just going to give you some example. Bakery is a category, dairy is a category, and things like that. These categories are assigned based on the type of products manufactured. Now, there are three levels of certification, and now the current revision is 7.2. Very shortly, it's going to undergo another revision, and that is going to be edition 8. There are a number of changes, and one of the changes is level 3, which is called the food quality certification. That's going to be separated, actually. It's going to be a separate certification. If your facility wants to get certified to quality, then you have to apply for it separately. But currently, the standard is, the revision number is 7.2. Under that, you have three different levels of certification, level 1, level 2, level 3. Level 1 is very basic, which is nothing but your GMPs and prerequisite programs, etc. Level 2 is food safety. Level 3 is food quality. Okay, and it's a two-stage audit. Okay, so the first stage is always document review to verify the adequacy of your documentation against the requirements of the code, SCIF code. Whereas the second stage, which is called the facility audit, is to assess or verify the effectiveness of implementation. Normally, it is about, the document review is about a day, and if it is level 1, it is just half day, but level 2 and level 3, it's a one-day activity, whereas the implementation, stage 2, is a day and a half to 2, okay? And I was just talking to you about edition 8. Edition 8 of the code is going to be published very soon, and probably in January, February next year. And as I mentioned to you, level 3 will disappear. Okay, it's going to disappear in the sense from the current current scheme, but it's going to be a separate scheme. So what about BRC? Unlike the SCIF code, BRC stands for British Retail Consortium. It has got different standards for different sectors. One for food safety, the current revision is issue 7. And another standard for packaging and packaging materials, and the current revision is 5. And you have one separate standard for storage and distribution, one for agents and brokers, and another one for consumer products. Consumer product, definitely this is not related to a food product. So what I'm saying here is you have got individual standards for individual sectors. Okay, and I'm not going to go through the details of each and every standard, but let me just quickly give you some information about food safety standard, global standard for food safety, issue 7. This is a single stage audit. Unlike SCIF, this is a single stage audit, wherein the auditor is going to verify both the documentation and implementation of the documented procedures at the same time. This standard comprehensively addresses food safety and quality requirements, unlike the SCIF code again. Single standard, one standard, that is the same standard, the standard for food will cover both food safety and quality in the same requirements prescribed in standard, okay. The audit duration is normally 2 days, okay? And other than that, I will not be able to get into the specifics of each standard. Even the food standard, I'm not going to get into detail because that itself will be one full day, actually, okay? So if I start explaining things like that. So I'm not going to get into the specifics of these standards. Let's move on to IFS. IFS, again, the previous one, BRC, is obviously, I think, it's a British standard. Now, IFS, otherwise known as International Featured Standard, very similar to BRC, you have one for food, one for logistics, one for packaging, one for household, etc., etc. So again, just to give you some idea about the packaging standard, previously this was a Canadian standard, but IFS bought the rights for the standard, and they have converted that standard into IFS standard. Okay. Yeah, that's about IFS. Then this one provides some information about, this slide provides some information about GERD, Global GERD Agricultural Practice, okay, GAP, the acronym GAP stands for GERD Agricultural Practices. This is a farm assurance standard for produce at the farm level, basically to verify the effectiveness of GERD farm practices. There are several standards under this scheme, and I think some time ago there were some 23 standards within the same global GAP standard, but I don't have the current count, because I think every time they introduce some new standard. And it has got two different options: one, single producers, and multiple producers. And some of the most popular standards are Integrated Farm Assurance Standard for Fruits and Vegetables, and the other one is Produce Safety Standard, otherwise known as PSS, and they also have Local GAP, GAP, one for North America, one for some other country in Latin America, one in Asia, things like that. You can also modify the requirements to suit the local requirement. That's called global, local GAP. Okay, so you have different standards. Now let me give some information about the 2017 or 21 based food safety management system standards. Obviously, this is an ISO quality management system based certification. And this standard or the scheme is owned and managed by the FSSC Foundation in the Netherlands. And this is also a GFSA benchmark scheme focusing only on food safety. Now, when I say food safety, it also includes packaging materials. And very recently, they have revised it to accommodate distribution also. Previously, I think that's not implemented, that's going to be implemented. But these are some changes that are taking place in the FSSC standard. This is a two-stage audit. And in stage one, an auditor is going to verify the preparedness for stage two. Basically, stage one is to make sure documentation is adequate and also the organization is prepared for stage two. Whereas in stage two, the effectiveness of implementation of the documented procedures will be verified by the auditor. So the big difference is this is not a prescriptive standard, unlike the ISO 17065, that is ESCO, BRC, IFS, and things like that. They have got a checklist, whereas here there is no checklist. This is a non-prescriptive standard. Okay, now we move on to section B. In this section, I will explain how you can successfully implement the chosen GFSA standard. Now, you have learned about the various GFSA standards. Now, you want to implement one of these standards. Okay? So how do you implement? That's what you're going to see in this section. When an organization decides to implement one of the GFSA certification standards, there's often the inclination to start doing something, because you have already decided to implement SQF, you have decided to implement BRC. But now, without looking into the planning aspects, you will have the urge to do something without taking time to consider the best approach for the company. Planning is really important. Okay, it is important to have sufficient knowledge of the chosen standard. Okay, you have to do it step by step. Okay, first, get to know about the standard. Okay, get to know more about HACCP. Okay? So then only you can implement an effective system in your organization. Therefore, if you are new to HACCP or new to the standard, you will want to read to gain an understanding of the entire process. If you're not familiar with HACCP, if you're not familiar with the standard, you have to take some training program. Also, you will go through the requirements of the standard in detail to familiarize yourself. It's not just attending a training program. As a team leader, you will get into the specific requirements of the standard. Also, you would like to consider a few things. And what are those things? Where exactly are you today? I mean, as far as system implementation is concerned, and where you want to be, okay? So this minus that is a gap. That means you have to do some gap analysis. You can do it yourself. You can also seek the help of consultants, technical experts, and people who are familiar with the standards, etc. So you'll have to generate a gap assessment. And that will be the basis for your implementing the standard, okay? And any company that is new to food safety management system will have to go through four key stages, actually. So this is what I mentioned to you in the beginning. A project management approach is quite ideal to implement any food safety standard. Stage one, planning and preparation. This is the planning phase. Then you'll have to, once you have planned everything, then you have to initiate the project. So that is the project initiation phase. Then you get into actually the implementation phase of it. That's the most difficult part of the project, actually. You'll encounter a lot of problems and you need the help of experts. You need the help of your own team, etc., etc. So this is a challenging phase. Okay? And the last stage is once you have implemented everything, then evaluate whether the project has been implemented successfully. Yeah, this is just a pictorial in stage one, what exactly you're going to do, okay? And this is the planning and preparation stage. This is where the foundation is actually laid. And I think it is important to take some time here to ensure that the that appropriate people are identified and trained, okay? Now, it's good to spend some time and come up with the following things, okay? So see whether you have chosen appropriate people to help you in the implementation. See whether they have been trained. And also you have to establish what support systems are already there and what needs to be developed. Again, this is some kind of gap assessment, okay? And consider the most appropriate structure for your team. And it's all about planning. Okay. The first, as a matter of fact, the first thing is to consider what you're trying to achieve, okay, and the path you take to fully implement the system depends on where you are starting from and the maturity of your existing system. If you're starting everything from scratch, then it's fine, but I'm sure you have some systems in place before implementing the GFSI certification project, okay? So that also needs to be considered. The best way is to make use of the PDCA cycle, Deming's PDCA cycle, plan, do, check, and act. Well, this is about project team awareness. Awareness is very important in this kind of project, okay? First, the senior management. Okay? Then the awareness for the food safety team. Now, early involvement of senior management is very fundamental to the effective implementation of the management system, food safety management system. Real commitment, we are talking about real commitment. If there is no commitment from senior management, then the system is going to fail. So that's why I just want to use the description, real commitment from the senior management, okay, is a must. And these managers also, senior managers also need a basic understanding of the most likely food safety hazard. They should know something about hazard. They should know something about food safety and all that. Then only they'll be able to support the whole program more effectively. Okay. And once that is done, then the steering group, I'm talking about the food safety team, they also need some kind of in-depth education and training, and that will definitely provide a valuable and visible support in implementing the whole project. Okay. As a matter of fact, the food safety team leader will have to play a key role in the success of the whole implementation project. Okay. In the leadership role, the team leader will be responsible for a few things, and what are those things? Okay. The team members have sufficient knowledge and expertise. That is the primary responsibility of the food safety team leader, because the team is going to support the team leader in the implementation project. Okay. And also, the team leader is responsible for knowing what individual skills are required and what can be made use of, okay? And what about their training, okay? And how is their organization? How do they organize work with regard to implementing the project? So these things need to be considered by the team leader. It's always important to evaluate the resources and systems in place and compared against the requirements to manage the food safety management system, you know, before you actually put up a plan, put up a project plan. Okay. This will include a review of the assessment of the current systems and personnel resources. Basically, I think you need to include the current systems and also the resources. Two questions might come up. Now, what resources and systems need to be in place for the food safety management system to work? That's the first question, because you're interested in implementing a robust food safety management system. Okay? So you should ask this question, what things are needed to have a robust food safety management system? Okay? And what systems are in place, what resources are in place? So A minus B is the gap, actually. So basically, you are doing a gap assessment. Okay. Let's talk about the implementation phase of a project. This is not a primer on project management, but you need to know something about the definition of project or what are the components of a project and things like that. So what is a project? A project has clear objectives based on need, okay? And obviously it will have a beginning and an end. It has defined goals and deliverables, etc., etc. It has got clearly defined scope, you know, things like that. And we talk about project sponsor, okay? This project sponsor is likely to be your senior management. Basically, you know, positions like CEO, Vice President of Operations, and things like that, because they are responsible for providing resources, including money. So these are, they're called project sponsors. A project leader, rather food safety team leader, for instance, is a project manager. Then the project manager is supposed to come up with a project plan. What is to be done, when it is to be done, and what kind of resources, detailed plan, that's called project plan, and the team leader is supposed to get it approved by the senior management, including the project sponsor. Once it gets approved, then you can start implementing the project. Okay. So that is the project implementation phase. This is something about organization of documents. Okay. Sorry, one second. It'll be a good idea to organize documentation into four levels. Again, people who are familiar with ISO 9000 kind of system, they will have some idea about the four levels of documentation. Again, the new revision of the ISO 9000 system is not very specific about documentation, but this is what it was in the previous versions. Okay. As you know, documentation is the most difficult part of the whole project. So basically, we are talking about four different levels of documentation. Level one is policies, level two is procedures, level three is work instructions, and level four is forms. Okay. The first level documentation is a food safety manual, okay, and it is separate from other procedures. It talks about the policies, basically everything in a nutshell. Policy means no details. So the policy portion should state the company's policy regarding the applicable clauses. What it means is if there is a requirement for management review, customer complaints, and things like that, the manual should briefly address the thing, but it doesn't have to get in, it doesn't have to get into the specifics of the procedures. That will be level two. Okay. The second level of documentation should be more detailed and address the procedures and also other things like who is responsible, how to do that, and things like that. Okay. How to do that is, in fact, I think level three, which is work instruction. It provides detailed information about about a particular thing. If you have document control procedures, what is done to achieve effective document control? That kind of a thing is documented in level three, which is your work instruction. Okay, and you will have associated forms, which is level four. Now, the first step in the development of your food safety manual is the creation of food safety manual itself. Okay, this is separate and totally distinct from developing food safety system procedures. Here, the purpose is to state briefly the policies and objectives of the company to achieve food safety in your organization. So, organize your food safety manual by major headings for easy reference. You may also make reference to the particular sections of the standard if you want to, but that's not a requirement. Okay, always have an index. Okay, index of the document, so for quick reference. Use simple, easy to understand statements to avoid confusion and provide as much clarity as possible. Okay, when I say documentation, it could also be in the form of a flowchart. Okay, you can describe your processes through flowchart. That is also quite possible. You are used to flowcharts. Okay, and that's also a form of documentation. Documents are dynamic and keep changing, and that's why you have document control procedures, document revision procedures. Okay. Revisions should have an effective date and revised documents should be distributed to all personnel. If you distributed the initial document to some six people in the company, then you have to make sure that even the revisions are, the older copies are withdrawn and the revised copies are distributed to those people who are issued the original copies actually. So these are some basic requirements of the food safety implementation system actually. Now, training is another important area. You should ensure your company employees are competent, trained, and continuously they upgrade their knowledge and skills. Okay? So that means you have to establish the necessary competencies for personnel whose activities actually may have an impact on food safety. So the training program is very important. You know? It should cover topics on food safety, GMP, hygiene, CCPs, food defense, etc., etc. You can also monitor the, you should, in several standards, all these standards require you to monitor the effectiveness of training. Okay? That can be done by monitoring the performance of employees, giving a quiz, giving a test, and things like that. There are several ways of doing it. Okay? And you must keep records of training provided to all employees. So these are some basic things required as far as training is concerned. Okay. Now, I know we have got another 10 minutes. We'll quickly go through section C, which talks about the pitfalls in the implementation of the food safety management system. The first thing that comes to our mind is lack of management support. Okay. Senior management standing behind a food safety management system is critical to the success. This is what I just mentioned earlier, actually. So when you're seeking your senior management support, you should be fully prepared with facts and figures, because they can only understand facts and figures. You know, I think you should be, as a team leader, you should be fully prepared to face their questions. You should plan everything in detail. That means the entire program, including goals, benefits, cost saving, budgetary considerations, everything you must, for your meeting with the senior management, you should be fully prepared with all these things. And you have to make it clear to them that the program will not compromise business operations. You know, that's probably their main concern sometimes, you know. So you have to assure them that the program will not compromise business operation. Okay. A comparison of what's similar, I think, you know, it's some kind of market intelligence. So what similar businesses are doing, that could definitely help the cause, actually. Okay. Then I think the other one is company culture. Company culture is also driven from the top, like the commitment culture is also driven from the top. You know, if you have superficial support, then the culture is also going to be very superficial. Okay? So for a company to create a strong safety culture, all employees need to know that senior management views food safety as a key element. It's not just lip service, but I think they are totally committed to the implementation of food safety management system and things like that. Okay. So the other one is, I think, failure to link project objectives with corporate goals. Food safety can never be independent of business objectives. Okay. Now, if there is no proper food safety in place, then the business is, they can be wiped out anytime. So the business objective should not be separate from food safety objective. So that's what I'm trying to highlight here. Team makeup, so you should include all relevant functions. And that is item three. One of the problems is, you know, the team leader does not include all relevant functions. This problem has a variety of causes, including resource constraints and the failure to, you know, you should not take up everything as a leader, as a food safety leader, you should not take up everything on your shoulders. Okay, so you should try to include as many functions as possible so that you are supported fully. Okay. And things like that. The other common pitfalls are, you need to have performance measures. So when you have a project, you should have goals. So that means you should have performance indicators, and you should monitor them periodically. Okay. Or if the project is not managed effectively, Or if your documentation is poor. So these are some common pitfalls as far as the implementation of the food safety management system is concerned. Okay. What about your rights? I think this is probably the last section, and I've got only 5 minutes to go. Okay. All GFSI schemes require certification bodies to provide a copy of the contract that includes as a minimum. When you decide to go for certification, you'll be choosing a body, certification body, okay? And that means you'll have to have a contract with the certification body. The certification contract should include as a minimum, number one, the scope of the audit and expected time to conduct and finalize the audit and the reporting requirement. So these things have come from the scheme owners, okay? They are absolutely required. And what is their fee structure? The certification body's fee structure. And the conditions under which the certificate is issued or withdrawn or suspended, okay? And what is their procedure for appeals, complaints, and disputes, okay? You may not agree with the findings of the auditor. Then that means a certification body should have a procedure to address your grievances and all that. So basically, I think, you know, these are your rights. Number one, to have a contract. The contract should specify these things. And it's an open communication process. If you're not satisfied with the findings of an auditor, yeah, you can take it up with the certification body. And that means they should have a procedure for disputes, appeals, and things like that. Okay. Also, something about complaints. When you want to register a complaint about the certification body's activities or appeals or disputes, etc., etc., again, you can take it up with the certification body. And if you're not satisfied with the responses, you can also take it up with the license owners, basically SCO, BRC, and things like that. And certification bodies are required to keep records of complaints and investigations, etc., etc., because these are going to be audited when they go for accreditation, or rather these are called conformity assessments, you know, essentially for the certification body. So these are some rights. These are your rights I wanted to bring up to your attention. Now, thank you very much for your time, and that completes the webinar. If you have any specific questions, you may raise now. Thank you once again.